Is there a difference between persecution and trial?
It feels like we have this attitude that you're not Christian enough if you're not being persecuted. As Christians, we label some things persecution that really aren't.
So you're not saying it's your fault so much as you're just saying it's my responsibility.
We just get on the defensive and we start trying to, you know, bat it back to make it somebody else's responsibility.
Relate that same experience and say that they were persecuted.
Or was it because they were turning the whole social fabric upside down?
The entire experience of Israel basically was just one long persecution, wasn't it?
The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name is Luke and I have the privilege of being at the table with Dave, Ben and special guest Ore. So,
well, thanks for having me guys.
Welcome.
I've been really looking forward to do this.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to it too. Yeah. That's actually something we've been talking about since before you got back here.
Yeah.
To be honest.
And just so that makes a bit more sense to the people who don't know you, Ore, just share who you are, what you do, where you're from.
Yeah, so my name is Ore Enoma, as already been said. I'm originally from Nigeria, but I grew up in Western Australia, particularly Perth. I currently work as a medical intern at a local hospital, and yeah, I'm just really passionate about medical missionary work and the health work in general, the health message. That's, you know, one of the reasons why I fell in love with this profession. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Fell in love with it. I bet that's harder to say now as an intern than it was when you were studying, right?
Oh yeah. Hindsight is 2020, they say. Yeah. Nah,
you're doing great, bro. You're doing great.
That's great. So as regular listeners will know, when we start, we like to pick our Humans of Adventism questions and we discuss them and sort of share a bit from our own experience. But when we have guests, we like to direct the questions at them. So Ore, questions are going to be headed at you. So,
okay.
Who's got a question for Ore?
Okay, I'll take the first one.
Go for it, Ben.
What is one of the hardest decisions you've ever had to make?
I think one of the hardest decisions I had to make was probably deciding even to go to medical school, actually. I think I was always, when I made a decision to follow Jesus, like I really wanted to do something for God, but I was very cognizant of the fact that, you know, Jesus could be coming back, you know, anytime, tomorrow, next week, you know, like this imminent sense of Jesus' return was always weighing on my mind. So like I was worried about choosing a pathway that would, being aware of how long it takes to be a doctor and to be, you know, useful doctor, and whether to go down that path or to continue doing what I was doing before, which was literature evangelism. And I really enjoyed that work because you do get that instant gratification of seeing those books going to someone's doors and knowing that that's, you know, some way day in the future could be useful for that person. So whereas that idea of that process of going through that journey of studying and, you know, not knowing whether you'll ever use that qualification, I think that was, I found that quite challenging and I had to wrestle with that.
It's interesting, you know, you mentioned that you were doing literature evangelism work before. Like that is a really special kind of work. You know, it takes a certain kind of person to be able to do that and thrive. And, you know, you said that you really enjoyed it. And I think that says a lot about your own character, because that's not a work that a lot of people enjoy. So
I mean, I will qualify that I did find it challenging. It's definitely a very challenging work, and I really give my hats to people who do it full time and, you know, make it their life work, because it's really, really, really hard going. It can be very, very discouraging. Yeah. But yeah, like I really did, at the time when I do it, I found I had some of my fondest memories come from, you know, doing it. Yeah.
All right. So a bit of a lighter question. How'd you get your name?
Oh, my name, well, it's, you have to understand in the context of a Nigerian family, it's very common to put a lot of weight and meaning to names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the context of a Nigerian family, it's very common to put weight and meaning two names, and Nigerians put a lot of, you know, emphasis on making sure they choose the right name for their child. So if you're a Christian, you get a Christian name. Okay. If you're Muslim, you get a Muslim name. Okay. Or sometimes your name has some kind of meaning to where you were born. So it's very common to be called Sunday or Monday if you were born on that day. For me, my name Ore is a Christian name. Mm-hmm. So it basically means, just paraphrasing, God has provided a gift for the family. It's a bit more eloquent than that, but that's in a nutshell what it means. Okay. Yeah, God has provided a gift, or God has provided a blessing. Yeah.
Well, we'd agree with that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not just for the family, though, I would say.
Yeah, for the rest of us. Yeah.
And you have how many siblings?
I have two other siblings.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're not called Sunday, Monday or anything
No, thankfully not.
It's so funny to me that you said that we put a lot of thought into our names, and then you also said sometimes they're called after the days of the week.
Yeah.
It's like those two things, do they really equate?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's like always remembering your birthday.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Celebration of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Siblings, older or younger?
Younger siblings. So, okay. And I'm the oldest, supposed to be the responsible one.
Supposed to be. Right.
Word of word.
Yeah. Well, the last question is, what is one event that changed you?
I would say one event. There are many events, but one event that really sticks to my mind is when I was at home and my family, they were going through the process of becoming Adventists, and I was still at a mindset at a time of, you know, still kind of, I guess, not sure whether Adventism was for me. Maybe just being apathetic about it. And one day I picked up a book called Last Day Events. My mom was just cleaning up the bookshelves. This book was just lying on the ground, and I wasn't even much of a reader back then. Like, unless I had to read something for school, but I never went out of my way to just read stuff. And this book somehow just like told me to pick it up and read it, you know, which was so out of my character. So I picked it up and it blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that book. It was basically, for those who don't know Last Day Events, it's an excerpt of the book The Great Controversy, and it focuses on the last few chapters of The Great Controversy, and it just made me realize my dire need for Christ. So I knew that I was not living the life that God was calling me to live, and I knew that I needed Jesus. It just realized my need for God.
And I guess that makes a lot of sense based on what you were saying before as well, that you were so aware of the immediacy of Jesus' return, however long away that was going to be, but it was foremost in your mind. And I guess it was because of, you know, reading that book, and that was where you were at in your experience. That was the focus. So
absolutely
cool. Well, we thought we would invite Ore to join us for this discussion, because Ore had a great suggestion for a topic, and so we thought, well, put your money where your mouth is. So come and join us and have the discussion with us. So, all right, tell us a little bit about what the topic is and how you came up with it.
So the topic that we're going to be discussing is topic of persecution, and whether persecution is a prerequisite to be a Christian, or a prerequisite to find, I guess, favor with God, or to be an appropriate or good Christian. And for me, like, it's something that has always weighed on my mind for years, actually, because I've always wondered, especially as I was reading through the Spirit of Prophecy and the whole collection. It soon dawned on me very quickly, even from the first book I read, which was Last Day Events, that persecution was a very, very essential, integral part of the Christian experience. And I think that was very different to what I was told as a young boy. Like, I grew up, not necessarily prosperity gospel, but my parents, we made it a habit to have family worship, and mom always, and my dad as well, reinforced the idea that if you follow the commandments, if you be the good Christian, God will bless you abundantly. You know, you'll never have a single trouble in your life. You'll always have your bread there with you, and your water to drink, and just this idea that Christians going through horrendous times really kind of shocked me. It really, I found that very confronting. So I think as I was reading through those books, especially reading through the particular books that I found really brought this topic to a head for me, was reading the testimonies, Ellen White's personal testimony, actually, seeing what she went through as a child and what she went through in her life.
And I asked the question to God. I literally asked this question: God, is this what being a Christian means? Is this what you're calling all of us, you know, to go through?
Mm.
Like, is this like a normal part of the Christian experience?
Yeah.
And that really kind of, I found out I didn't know how to answer that question. I didn't really necessarily get an answer to that per se, but it's something that I've been thinking about and ruminating about. And yeah, it's something that I've been grappling with. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's, I really appreciate you sharing the backstory, because that does, it adds a lot of texture to that.
Mm.
One thing that sort of stood out to me as you were talking about that, I was sort of reflecting on my own experience, and I guess that the question that bubbles to the surface is, you know, how do we define persecution? How bad does it have to be, or what does persecution look like? What are we actually talking about? This is not just for you, Ori, I mean, like, all of us collectively. How do you categorize? How do we define that?
If I was to try and define that, I would say that persecution would be anything that would be an ill effect upon your life by sharing or by just living the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So not just somebody disagreeing with you, but actually having a negative effect on your life.
Okay.
Yeah, it depends on what the question is. Like, are we talking about the word? Are we defining the word persecution? Because we're defining the word persecution, then it's more broad than that, obviously. But if we're defining what we think of when we think of persecution in the Christian walk, then... Yeah, pretty much agree with what Ben just said.
Yeah, I would be thinking in the context of the Christian walk, because that's I guess that's the experience that Ori's talking about. But
I think it's important to note both, though, because I would maybe go as far as to say that as Christians we label some things persecution that really aren't.
Mm.
Yeah,
I don't think we're going to get there anyway. But you know, I'm just going to say that up front.
Yeah.
Another thing that really came to the forefront of my mind is when we're defining it, it's like, is there a difference between persecution and trial? Right? Like, are there, because I hear those two words used interchangeably a lot, and I feel like they're different words. Like, for me, trial takes on a much more broader definition than persecution. Trial could come in various forms. It could be a result of external or internal circumstances. It could be a result of something that's your fault or not your fault. Whereas persecution, for me, seems more external, something that is out of your control, something that is impacting your ability to live out your faith.
Intentionally.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's malicious. There's the word I was looking for.
It's the intention behind it, because as you were saying, they're definitely different, because God will give us trials, but God's not going to persecute us.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so what effect... I got another question. All right, you mentioned before, you were saying, you know, is this what it means to be a Christian? I'm interested in your thoughts, but you guys too, but what is it about persecution that is inextricably linked to being a Christian, that we can't separate from our Christianity? Is that question clear enough? I'm not sure. Is there an element of persecution that we cannot escape, or is it circumstantial?
It would appear that if you look through the Bible or any Christian literature that tries to reflect the Christian experience, it would seem like persecution is like a barometer of our relationship with God. So it almost seems to be looked at in those through those lens, that if you are persecuted, it means that you're heading in the right direction with your relationship with God. Whereas if you're not, then you know there must be something not quite right.
Yeah,
with your relationship with God. So
you could say that if we are truly living out the principles of a Christian life, it will attract persecution.
Exactly.
And would you also say that it has probably more to do with the people around you than you living your faith as well? Because we're looking very internally, but there's a fair external point. I'm thinking about the story of Jeremiah, and you're often going to the kings of Israel and talking about how the Babylonians are going to be coming and they're going to put yokes about them, and he got all sorts of persecution about him. But if he'd gone to, say, a king of a different time who was actually following the principles of God, I believe the reaction would have been quite different.
it's interesting because it does depend on the people around us to the degree that they're the ones that are doing the persecuting. Mm. But, you know, as you were saying about that, Ben, it sort of made me think of what Jesus says, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount. You remember that where it talks about loving your enemies? For chapter 5 from verse 43, I'm just looking at now. And you've heard it said that you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use and persecute you. Mm. So there's persecute. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, then what more do you do than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Mm. Therefore, you shall be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect.
Mm.
And I think that is coming back around to what you were saying before, Ore, that it is required for us in our Christianity because God requires us to be followers of him, and he sends the rain on the just and the unjust. You know, he treats well and looks after the needs of people who love him, but he also looks after the needs of people who hate him. And as Christians, we should also be, you know, equal in our dealing with the people that are around us.
Yeah, coming into contact with both.
Mm. Mm.
I was looking for... I couldn't remember if it was in Timothy or Peter. That's why I got a bit confused there. Mm. The verse that says, it's 2 Timothy 3:12, says, yes, and all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution.
Yeah.
So that answers your question fairly directly, I think.
Mm.
That at some point in our lives, if we're living righteously, it is going to, as you said, incite persecution, right? Mm. People are going to, whether it's out of jealousy for, you know, the way that people maybe like us because we're kind and loving and whatever, or whether it's because we do things differently and they don't like that. In some way, it's going to incite this attitude of persecution.
Or just a downright hatred of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whilst I think the answer is yes, I think maybe your question is more complex than that, and I know that because we've talked about this before, but even just within the question itself, I think you're asking because it feels like that within Christianity. Is that fair to say, Ore, that it feels like we have this attitude that you're not Christian enough if you're not being persecuted?
Yeah.
Right. Mm. So we've almost made it a measure of salvation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we attribute some form of righteousness to the amount of persecution. The more persecuted you get, therefore the more righteous you must be, because you will have heard this before in church, the devil's not happy with you, right?
Mm.
And yeah, that was kind of why I mentioned what I did at the beginning. It doesn't necessarily mean that, right? Because if you're not living righteously, other people are not going to be happy with you.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean the devil's not happy with you, and therefore, you know, you're doing the right thing.
Mm.
So
I was going
to
say,
we have to be careful about using persecution as a measure of righteousness, because persecution doesn't always mean that, you know, our good deeds have incited persecution. Sometimes it just means we're being, you know, a jerk.
Yeah. I was thinking about this before. There are a number of occasions that I have seen people go through what I would, at least to the external eye, what I see, it looks like a pretty straight up cause and effect scenario where they are being stubborn and therefore people don't like that. And so people are getting rubbed the wrong way and it causes friction. Mm-hmm. And then they say, oh, well, you know, yeah, Satan obviously hates what I'm doing. And so I'm obviously the one that's in the right. And I've observed that in us. And I just don't understand how people can make that kind of call. One, because I think it's a bit of a long shot to call that persecution in a lot of cases. Like, is that really persecution?
Right.
What the criteria that you were laying out earlier, Ben, you know, that it needs to have direct detrimental impact on your life.
Mm.
You know, is someone's opposition really having that? You know, I mean, yes, I think that...
only if you let it.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, right? Mm. I mean... If you are, you know, for instance, if you're a minister or something like that, you have an official position and someone gossips or lies about you and you lose your job, that is legitimate damage that's happening to your life. But for the most part, somebody disagreeing with you, it might be emotionally difficult, but it's not persecution. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, I think people are a little too free with their idea of what actually entails persecution. Right. Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could even go as far as saying persecution is always intentional. People aren't just accidentally persecuting you, whereas somebody disagreeing with you, it might not be intentionally malicious at all.
Yeah. Just they don't agree.
Right. Simple. You might just be wrong.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Because when I was thinking of the definition, I was actually thinking of an instance in my life. So when I was just starting off as an accountant, the first tax position I had, I was called into the office and they were looking at giving me all these extra hours, and they were looking at potentially setting me up in a fly-in, fly-out situation. But it required me to work on the Sabbath. And I've turned down Saturday work before. I said, well, I can't because I have family time. I didn't really want to talk about my religion in the workplace at that point. I'm just like, no, I'm a Christian. I should be upfront about this. So yeah. I let it drop that my family time is actually going to church. Mm. Well, a week later, apparently there were so many complaints against me that I had to be let go.
Wow. Yeah.
And yet, a week before, I was up for promotion.
Yeah. Wow. And I think that's a really obvious and intentional thing, because obviously nothing changed about your work. Right. Yeah. you didn't suddenly start doing a bad job.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only change, but people obviously didn't like that, and so they did something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But on the flip side, you know how you're talking about God will often look after us? Within 2 months, I was unemployed for only about 2 months, and then I got a much better job, and that was the one I was with for many, many years after that. So God looked after me. So there is the inverse with persecution as well.
But like Ore was saying before, and that is absolutely right, I believe that God does look after us, but it's not a guaranteed thing, you know?
No, and
when we expect it to be like a vending machine, you know, oh God, I'm going to, you know, stand up for you in this principle or that principle, and therefore that means you're going to look after me and I'm going to get a good job next. It doesn't actually always work that way. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it actually works out worse than that. But I think God looks for every opportunity to bless.
Well, I would have looked at it this way. If what I needed in my life was a series of trials, not persecutions, God would have sent me down that path instead, because that would have been what my eternal life that he wanted to give me needed.
That's a really interesting insight that you're actually just showing. Like you're giving it a sense of like God demonstrating his providence in that he's giving you what you need and looking ahead in terms of your salvation or well-being.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting insight that you're giving, because I think that might help me unravel the kind of the conflicts that I have with this, because it seems like, you know, because Luke, you mentioned that, you know, that verse where God is saying God sends blessings to the just and the unjust, and you know, curses to the just and the unjust, and it would appear that there seems to be a disparity, because all the examples that you guys gave seems to come from the New Testament of Jesus' sermon and that verse that Paul. Whereas there doesn't seem to be a lot of Old Testament examples of persecution. Not that there aren't. They obviously if we look at what Israel went through, you know, we'll see examples of that. But all in all, there seems to be a lot more emphasis or promises in the Old Testament of, you know, God encouraging or giving promises of blessings, especially in the Psalms and in the Proverbs as well. And also looking at, you know, Solomon's life or Abraham's life, you know, they seem to be very gilded with blessing. Whereas there seems to be a sudden shift in the New Testament where the focus is on, you know, you're going to go through persecution because Jesus went through persecution, kind of thing. Like, is it just me that sees that disparity, or
do you think it might be to do with the experience of the people that the books were written for? You know, like in the Old Testament, persecution was kind of their life. That's what they were all living through. You know, you think about the kings, you think about the entire experience of Israel basically was just one long persecution, wasn't it? You know, they had small moments in the middle where things kind of went all right for a while, but on the most part, it was just persecution after persecution. And then in the New Testament, when the instruction was given, most of the time period when that instruction was given, there wasn't a great deal of persecution, right? There was a little bit, but most of it was still coming. And so maybe the instruction around persecution in the New Testament was given to them because at that time they had a moment of peace. And it was kind of like a warning of things aren't going to always be like this. Whereas in the Old Testament, they were kind of in the fire and God was trying to encourage them about the blessing. I don't know.
Can I throw an alternative out there?
Of course you can. That's what this is about.
Well, I was thinking about this and I
look out. He was thinking.
Well, you know, I think as I talk. So, I think the key to understanding that difference comes from the change or the pivot between a visible nation of Israel and spiritual Israel. Although spiritual Israel, of course, was always present, but that God's denominated people was a nation up until that point. And so God was dealing with them corporately much more so than he does after that point. And so I think that they, because they were going through that experience as a nation, they were also looking forward, and I think this is a function of how the prophets looked at eschatology as well, right? So if you read the Old Testament prophets looking forward to Jesus' return, they flatten Jesus' first and second coming together, right? You read a lot of the prophecies, and they flatten the events of Jesus' first coming with the second coming, and that leads to a lot of the confusion that we see when Jesus actually arrives.
Because as a coming as a conqueror rather than to die on a cross.
Exactly. And so if they're having that problem where they're sort of flattening all of that together, is that perhaps the lens that they're writing through when they're in the Old Testament? They're looking forward to the prosperity that comes from the conquering king in the future more so than their temporal experience at the time. Just a thought.
I think there's merit in that thought.
So, Ben, you shared an experience that you had. I'm curious for you guys. Have you experienced something that you would term persecution?
No, not a great deal. Maybe little bits and bobs here and there, but on the most part, I think we've got it pretty easy, so
yeah,
not really going to complain a lot.
Because I was going to say, reflecting on the rest of my life, that's about the only highlight. I mean, you find people will...
Highlight.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're talking about persecution
persecution, yeah.
Yeah, but most of the time, I just come across people that are unhappy with me being a Christian or cranky and all the rest of it, and you just, well, okay, agree to disagree and move on.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
I haven't even really had the typical resistance of somebody who chooses to worship on Saturdays. I haven't even really had a problem with that in my life, you know, where I've had to worry about Sabbath. So just so cruisy.
Yeah, I got fired for that once.
Okay.
But again, like...
Would you class that as persecution?
No.
No, not really.
No, yeah. Because, I mean, they weren't angry about it or anything. They tried to, like, manipulate me to stay because you know, I got on really well with them. We were friends.
Yeah.
Well, we were on really good terms anyway as far as a boss and an employee would go. But, yeah, they basically just, they wanted to do something different with the rostering and all the rest. And that meant that I didn't have a choice if I was going to stay there. And so they let me go. But I didn't feel persecuted. It was inconvenient. Yeah. But not persecuted. And there are other times I can think of in my church experience where there have been people who have misunderstood me and opposed me, but I don't think they were malicious. I don't think they were trying to do me harm. I think they were just trying to protect what they saw to be the truth or the right way of doing things or whatever. It wasn't about me personally. I didn't need to take it personally, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been you know, verbally abused and whatever in a number of situations. But again, nothing that I would think that would fit the criteria that we stated before, right? Of significantly negatively affecting our life. And so,
what about on the west? Is it different over there?
Like on the west coast,
West Australians. Is it safe?
I think it's pretty safe. it's not too hectic down there. I can assure you. But I think it's interesting because I think there'll be some people who might relate that same experience and say that they were persecuted from that. And I think the key words that I've been marinating in my mind is discernment and humility. I think if you have those two things, those two ingredients, it helps moderate your view of persecution. And if you miss those things, then you're more likely to perceive or be readily to perceive something as persecution when it may not necessarily be.
Yeah, do you think that could have something, and I'm sorry, if this is exactly what you said, I'm sorry, but maybe it's just different wording, but have you noticed that some people have this victim mindset and they go looking for something to interpret as persecution?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's an interesting thought. It shifts away that responsibility from you, whereas it's much harder to say, no, actually, I was at fault there. You know, I should have done better, and I should have had more discernment.
Yeah.
And I think that's the crux of the issue there.
You know, there's a guy, not a Christian. He was a customer of mine, actually. And there's a bunch of reasons that I would disagree with this man on. But there's one thing that he said to me when I was sitting in his office and we were talking about his business. We weren't talking about spirituality at all. But something he said that just stuck in my mind, and I can still remember the conversation. And I still remember he ran a cleaning business. And he was one of these guys that he was a serial entrepreneur. He would start a business, see if it worked. If it folded, it folded. If it worked, it worked. And then he'd sell the business and then go do something else. He had a bunch of different things. This one was cleaning, and I went and he invited me. I sat in his office, and he's one of these guys that I'm sure he can't think in an uncluttered space, right? So, like, you know, you literally come into this tiny room. He's got a small desk and papers, like, and up to just about eye height, and like the gap in the middle for you to talk to him through. Like, that's sort of this is the setting that we're in. But he was running a very successful business, and so great, you know, good for him. But as we were talking, I said, "What does it make that makes you different, Gary? Like, what's your secret sauce?" And he said, easy answer. He said, "I am responsible for everything that happens." I said, "Do you mean you do everything yourself?" He said, "No, I mean, I'm responsible for everything that happens." Because he said, I'll give you an example. He said, there was a young guy that was working for me, and he had there was a complaint made about him. Apparently he went and cleaned something and he damaged it. It was really, really bad job anyway. And he said, and that damage that was done was my fault. It was either my fault because I didn't adequately train him before I sent him out. It was my fault because I didn't supervise him when he went out and he hadn't been working for me too long. Or it could have been my fault because I made the wrong choice when I hired him. But the minute that I make it his fault for doing the wrong thing, I have no control over what happens next. And he said, so everything that everybody does, every mistake that everyone makes is my responsibility. But that also means that any wins we make, we all win. And that was how he viewed his work. And at the time, it didn't mean much to me. But I thought about it later on, and I thought, you know, if we viewed our lives like that, or if we viewed our faith like that, where rather than saying, you know, oh, well, it was because someone baited me, or, you know, or because this happened, if we were to take responsibility, even if we're not saying, well, it's my fault in the sense that you're causally doing it, but so you're not saying it's your fault so much as you're just saying it's my responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really big mind shift that a lot of people need to make. And I think we all need to make, because none of us like being the one where the buck stops, right? We all want to push that responsibility to the next person if we can, but it's not healthy for us to do. We don't have any power when we do that. So even if we're not technically the one at fault. So just coming back, something that I was thinking around that is, if people are like that, how do we handle that? You know, or maybe how do we identify that in our own lives? Because, and I ask that question because it's often the most difficult to self-evaluate. It's a lot easier to see those kind of faults in other people, but how do we view that? Is it something that we can be helped through, or is it something a conclusion we have to come to by ourselves?
I think it just comes back to just being humble. Yeah, I think it's as simple as that. If you can reach to a point where you can say, look, I may have played some role in that, I think that's a huge step already. You know, I think we need to come to, you know, at the feet of Jesus and ask God for assistance to look introspectively. I think it's really as simple as that, really. Yeah, it doesn't have to be something so complicated. Yeah, I think if we do that more often than not, we'll find ourselves, you know, be more responsible. Yeah,
we need to relax a little as well. I think most people would live in the defensive all the time. You know, I don't know whether it's just society has made us that way or what, but as soon as you say something to somebody else that could be considered in the slightest bit criticizing them, yeah, we just get on the defensive and we start trying to, you know, bat it back to make it somebody else's responsibility.
Yeah.
Whereas if we were just to just chill a little bit and recognize that we don't have to defend ourselves, you know, we can just stop and evaluate what they're actually saying rather than fighting immediately before we even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would help a lot.
Yeah, it's trouble is, I think it is, it's very hard for us because it's partly human nature. Think about our first parents and the initial sin. Adam turned around and blamed Eve. Eve turned around and blamed the serpent. Neither of them took responsibility for what had happened.
Yeah, mm. True.
And if our first parents did that, how much more are we going to?
And if I could go back to the idea of real persecution, if what we're saying before is true, and that is the true expression of Christianity leads naturally and necessarily to persecution, and we have all sat here and virtually said we have never experienced real persecution, at least in our context, right? You know, in Australia, in, you know, the 2000 and somethings, right? We don't typically experience that. What does that say? And what should we do about that?
Well, obviously it says that none of us are righteous, right? Because we're not inciting the devil's wrath, so.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. Tongue in cheek.
Really interesting quote. I know that was tongue in cheek, but read The Great Controversy, and the first chapter in particular, I'm just paraphrasing here, which he says the reason why we see so little persecution is because there's so little revival among us. And I think that really is a big slap in the face, because it just and I think that's probably what I found confronting about it, because it's like, what do you mean? Like, I go to church every week, like, you know, like, you know, I return my tithe, like, you know, like, why isn't this persecution happening? And it just makes me think, well, like, what am I doing that's not inviting persecution? You know, am I being too passive about my faith? Am I not being as open about my faith? Like you mentioned about, you know, Ben, when you were talking about how, you know, like you mentioned in the job interview, you didn't want to express your faith too openly.
Yeah.
I find myself in that situation. Maybe I'm being too passive about opening about my faith, and that's why I'm not experiencing the persecution. If people knew that I was a Adventist, you know, through and through, they'd be, you know, they wouldn't appreciate that more often. Mm-hmm. You know.
Is that necessary though? Like, I agree with what you're saying in principle, but is it necessarily the case that by us being an Adventist or a Christian, that people should be unhappy about that? Do you know what I mean? Like, I definitely understand where you're coming from. I'm just throwing a curveball because whilst obviously I can see the perspective of that quotation, I also wonder whether when we say revival, do we often think, what's a nice way of putting this?
Don't put it nicely.
Zeal. Oh, that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Do we instead think zeal that's maybe not necessarily well thought through or... I don't know, because there's being, wish I could formulate this in my head in a way that sounded sensible rather than upset. as Christians, sometimes we create our own opposition by the way that we share our faith, right?
Yeah.
So my question is, does being an Adventist necessarily need to rub people up the wrong way? Or should persecution that is incited by us being Adventist be more, I don't know whether localized is the word I'm looking for, but it's the one that's coming to mind. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm sorry. I'm wishing it was not the best sentence I could have formed, but anyway.
Are you more saying that we shouldn't go kind of looking for it by putting rough words around our message?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's kind of part of what I'm saying. I'm not sure if I'm going as far as saying that we go looking for it, but I'm just saying we need to be careful about the way that we interpret quotations like that, because we could go and be like, all right, sweet, I'm going to be revived. But our definition of revival could just be unwise zeal. And we could be going out there and sharing the gospel in a way that is counterproductive.
Yeah. So how about...
And that will incite persecution, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
But is that really persecution, or is that just us getting our just desserts?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes we earn that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I was thinking when we were sharing before, I think, I think Ben might have mentioned it as well, you know, that if we get out there and, you know, just, you know, at work or whatever, and we're honest about our faith, in some cases that may incite a degree of persecution like you experienced, right? Yeah. So it absolutely can. But when you look at the kind of persecution that the early church received, was it simply because they made an assent to faith? Or was it because they were turning the whole social fabric upside down? I would say it was the latter. And so my question is, as Christians, we should be in the process of turning the social fabric upside down. Now, I'm not talking about anarchy, but what I'm meaning is if we were actually out there being the hands and feet of Jesus in a social setting, you know, actually changing people's lives, actually liberating people from, you know, predatory debt cycles, and, you know, all the people that are struggling in various ways, you know, with their health, maybe their mental health, if we as churches were leveraging all of our energy into changing people's lives, that would probably be more likely to create real persecution, because that would be upsetting the social order, because people that didn't have a voice before now do. People who didn't have stability before now have it, and so they can be making differences. Now, I'm not stating who or where that persecution would come from, but I think just making a verbal assent to faith isn't really damaging anybody. I think if we were actually living out the gospel and making changes at that root level of society, that would probably excite a lot more legitimate persecution than anything else. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? That was just sort of, I was thinking that as I was talking.
For me, I just think back to, I guess at a risk of being like cliche, like what Jesus did. You know, the best answer is always Jesus, right?
Yeah.
But like the reason why I bring up Jesus, like when I see Jesus, is what he did. Was it that, like it was radical? Yes, it did undertone completely destroy the fabric of society at the time, but at the same time I felt like the things that he was promoting shouldn't have done that. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
love everyone.
You know what I mean? Like and I think what I'm getting with that is that, like, we don't have to do too much to cause that fundamental change in society that will cause such an upheaval that people will start persecuting us. Like, I feel like just simply being lovable Christians could still excite that persecution, because we are simply, because we are in a conflict, we are in a war, and we're going to incite that, you know, as a byproduct of that.
Can I offer you an example to bolster what you're saying? You stand up for the underdog at work, you know, that might incite persecution. Right? You know, because they're not popular and you're siding with them, and yet that's what Jesus would do.
Yeah.
So you're right, you know, sometimes doing the right thing will cause persecution. Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's probably the only valid place for persecution, right? Like, as far as being persecuted for doing the right thing. If we're being persecuted, I can't remember where the text is, but I think Paul writes, doesn't he, that, you know, if you are, basically, if you're getting persecuted for something you actually did, then where's the glory in that? You know, it's much better if you're being persecuted for doing something that's good. So I can't remember that. Do you remember that text?
I feel like that's Jesus.
Is that Jesus?
In any case, it doesn't really matter.
You know the passage.
I got a verse. I've had a verse open in front of me for yonks.
No, well, you should read it.
1 Peter 3:17 says, "It's better if it is the will of God to suffer for doing good than for doing evil."
Yeah,
which is saying something similar to what you're saying. Yeah, definitely, of course, and yeah. See, I like that definition of revival a lot better than. And I know that's not what the quote was saying, but the definition that is often conjured up in our minds when we think of revival, because I'm sorry, but my experience with people and revival is just belligerence, you know? And that if that incites persecution, I would question, is that really persecution, or is that you just getting what you deserved? Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I've been on the end of that, and I would not stand here and say that I was being persecuted. I would say I was being resisted because I was being an idiot.
Yeah,
you know, I had all of the best intentions, of course, but that doesn't make it right. And so, I think it's important that we just just careful about the way that we define these things, so that when we go away from this conversation, we don't go out looking for persecution by just being, you know, really arrogant and upfront with our faith in a way that's distasteful, and therefore you're going to actually have the opposite results for the gospel.
Yeah.
We need to be still doing what's right and promoting what's right. And if we're being persecuted for that, then good, you know, take it as a badge of honor. I would even go as far as to say, don't just take it as a badge of honor. First question yourself, did I do something that warranted that?
Yeah.
And then if you cannot find anything, okay, then take it as a badge of honor. Yeah. But let's evaluate ourselves first. Because I think 9 times out of 10, in a country like ours, and I want to qualify that, because if you're living in a country where persecution is a real thing, I mean, that's a completely different story.
Yes.
You know, I was listening to some testimonies years ago from these people that were doing ministry in the Middle East, and that's persecution. Yeah. You know, that's real persecution, where you're fearing for your life every day because you believe in Jesus. I've never experienced that.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, well, if we collectively can summarize a little bit some of the takeaways from this, because I feel like
it's been a really weird conversation.
It has. I feel like it's kind of gone in every direction. It's like trying to keep ants in a nest. But I think...
Let's bring them home then.
Yeah, let's bring them home. So I think some of the takeaways are, if we need to be self-aware. So we need to know, are we actually experiencing real persecution, or is it either imagined or deserved?
Yeah.
I think that's probably...
Yeah, because there's the victim mentality, or we've just just done something, been a jerk.
Yeah. When you're trying to share your faith with somebody, did you do it in a loving and understanding manner, or did you just railroad and just run straight over the person?
I think of some friends that I was trying to share a certain doctrine with years ago when I was a young Bible worker, and I did not do it in the right way. We started this argumentative discourse, and it did not benefit anybody. And there was resistance. And at the time, I might have felt like that was persecution, or that they were rejecting the faith or something like that. Yeah. But they weren't. They were just rejecting my way of sharing the message. And that's because I was doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I'm... Let's take full responsibility, as you were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. That was my fault. Not the message, not Jesus, not them. Yeah. And sometimes we've just got to be willing to just recognize that when it comes to the things that we might term as persecution. We've also said that persecution and trial are two separate things, which I think is an important distinction. Because, there will be trials of our faith, and sometimes that trial will be in the way of God allowing persecution. I mean, you think of Job. That's a good example of a trial that involved persecution. But, as you pointed out, Ben, it's not God is actively persecuting us, whereas he might actively present a trial in our lives just to, you know, help us to grow, help us to move forward.
And also that discernment and humility is a moderator of true persecution.
Yeah, definitely. And this is probably too late to go there, so maybe we might need to do a part two, but Ore asked me the question, I believe it was last year, just because, you know, you're being like, no, what was your question? It was around which is worse, being persecuted or not receiving any persecution at all, you know, because in some ways when you're not being persecuted at all, when there's nothing going on negative in your life, that's when you're the most likely to fall because you just become apathetic. Whereas when you look at most of the examples of persecution in the scriptures, it drives you closer to Jesus. So, you know, that's an interesting conversation potentially for another time. But sometimes let's thank God for the persecution, for the trials, because without it, we would grow cold.
I think that's very true. Very true. Well, I think we've reached a good place in our conversation to sew it up before we kick off another one that'll take us a long way down another rabbit hole. But thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. Ore, thank you for joining us at the table. It's been so good to have you.
Thanks for having me here, guys. I really enjoyed it.
So we'll have to get you back for another one. So
part two.
Exactly. So we were going to leave it there. You guys have a great week. Thank you for joining us. If you've enjoyed this, please send it to a friend. Send it to someone. Tell them about it. And if we can get any more reviews, we would love to hear from you over there too. And we will read out your review on the show and give you a free Aussie nickname. So we will catch you guys next week.
And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners, and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even a dollar a month upwards. But at different levels, there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.